Get a deeper connection with the Cougars of BYU Sports.
God gives us a gift, and we use that gift until He takes it away.
Deep Blue.
Just sitting down afterward and being really tired and thinking like, wow, I just won the U.S. championship.
This is Deep Blue. Here's your host, Jason Shepherd.
Thank you for tuning in for a new episode of Deep Blue. This is the show where we get to know the person behind the number that you see on the field or the court. These are the true stories of BYU athletes from their own mouths, and I am so happy to have my guest in studio with me today. He is former Cougar hoopster. He is Nate Austin. Nate, how are you, my friend?
I'm great. It's so good to be back here. I love this place. I love BYU, so it's great to be back.
All right. Well, let's start right there. You are back at BYU. You left for a little bit after your playing career, and we'll get into some of that as well. But now you're back, and not just back at BYU. You're back with the basketball team. For those who may not know, what are you doing now with the Cougar basketball team?
Yeah, so my official title, I'm the director of operations with the men's basketball team. Got hired on Coach Pope's staff about just over a month ago, and essentially in charge of all the operational things, all the logistical things, and able to coach a little bit as well. But yeah, it's been a dream come true, really, to be back and be part of the staff.
And as I mentioned, we'll get into some of the other places that you've been, but you were coming from a coaching situation. You've been head coach, you've been an assistant coach at high school and at Salt Lake Community College. Was there any trepidation going to the director of ops? You said there is some coaching into it, but were you kind of hoping maybe that Coach Pope was calling to ask you to come on the staff?
I love coaching. I mean, obviously, there's the thing I love about this role is it allows me to wear a lot of hats and it allows me to gain a ton of experience. And so that when I do, become an assistant coach or head coach one day, that I will have had the opportunity to experience all the different things and understand the ins and outs of running a program. And so I actually think this role is perfect for me. My foot in the door in terms, and then just learning, because Coach Pope runs the program, so well, and he attacks, running a program from every single angle, and I'm intricately involved in all those angles, and so it helps me to really see, okay, this is how you truly run a program. And so, yeah, I would love to coach more, but for me, I think my development as a coach and hopefully someone who has his own program one day, I think this job is perfectly suited for me.
So head coach, Division I, that's the goal for you ultimately, right?
I mean, ultimately the goal is to be the head coach here. I love this place, and I love everything about BYU. And so my dream job would be the head man here.
Why do you love BYU so much? What is it about BYU that has grabbed you like it has?
Part of it is how I was raised. I grew up a huge BYU fan. My family had season tickets to football games, and so my dad and I, when I was really young, we had two, and so me and my brother would rotate who got to go with my dad on Saturdays to football games. And so we'd begin the season, we'd, okay, here's the three games you're going to, here's the three games I got. And I just grew up a huge BYU fan and cheering for BYU, and we'd go to basketball games, and occasionally we'll travel on the road and watch football play in a different state. And both my parents graduated from BYU. Myself, my three siblings have all graduated from BYU, and so we're just a BYU family through and through. And so I think just the fandom from the sports side is a big part of it, but then also just the religious side of it. Of I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I truly love the mission of the school. That it's not just about, winning games is important and achieving high academics is important, but it's also about becoming better people. It's also about treating people right. It's about developing the person, and not just achievement. And obviously, we're uber competitive. We try to win. We want to win at the highest level. But that's hopefully building the person along the way, so that when people do leave here, having won tons of games and won championships, that they're a better person because they've come through BYU. And I just love the mission of the university and what it stands for. And then also, perhaps from a more selfish perspective, it allows me to truly practice my beliefs. And the Sunday off thing is a great thing. Yeah. It's a family day. It's a day for God. It's a day for worship. And I love that every Sunday I can count on. I'm going to see my family. I'm going to be able to go to church and worship my Father in heaven and my Savior Jesus Christ. And so I think all those things kind of wrap into it. It just makes this place a very special place.
Oh, what a representative you are for everything BYU. And you obviously played here, and we'll get to that in a minute. But after your playing career, you graduated from BYU. You were an assistant coach at Lone Peak, your alma mater, then a grad assistant here at BYU. for a couple years, then head coach at Grantsville High School. What was that process like for you to ultimately get that head coaching job at Grantsville High?
Yeah, so after when I was a GA here, my last year, towards the end of the tail end of that, Coach Pope came to me and said, "Okay, like, hey, your friendship is a GA, we got to find you a college job." And I told him, I was like, "I think I just want to do high school." And he's like, "Oh, well, if that kind of, you know, if that suits you, if that's all you want to do, then let's go for it." And so it was during COVID. And so I started trying to see what jobs were opened up, and there was not a ton of jobs. And so initially I was like, I'm not going to do anything lower than 5A in Utah, like 5 or 6A. Like that's kind of my standard. And there were only a couple that were opened up, and like Lehigh was one of them. But, you know, it was between me and Quincy Lewis to get the Lehigh job. And I, you know, obviously stood no chance, you know, guy with, you know, state championships and a national championship. And so, you know, I applied, but I knew that was not very likely. But ultimately, someone just reached out to me about the Grantsville job. So one of my sophomore head coach at Lone Peak, his name is Reed Bromley, and I've stayed in touch with him forever. And his wife Rhonda Bromley is, you know, was the principal at Lone Peak, and she worked at the Alpine School District as the, you know, just different things, and she's really connected, and so she knows about all these different jobs. And so she reached out and said, "Hey, the Grantsville job's open." And then I was like, it's a little bit, you know, too small of a school for me. I'm not gonna, you know, go there. But eventually, I decided to apply and got the job, and it just clicked. It felt right to go in there. But ultimately, the reason I wanted to go the high school route is because I wanted to be a head coach. I wanted to run a program. I wanted to get right in there and have the coaching, have the relationships. And it was a great experience to be able to, for the last three years, to be able to run a program and build relationships with the players and be able to, you know, be in charge of offense and defense and gear and all the things that come into it. It's you know, summer workouts and scheduling, and there's a lot of things that go into it, but it was a ton of fun.
And the Grantsville red is acceptable red to be wearing, correct?
I do not wear Ute red. I wear cowboy red or Grantsville red.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. My BYU guy right here.
I had zero red in my closet when I got the job. And so the first thing I did was I bought some red, and actually I owned it. Like, I mean, I wore it probably red, black, or white every single day while I was there. I mean, occasionally I'd mix in a BYU hoodie at school, but for the most part I was wearing red all day long. And it took probably a few months for my wife to get adjusted to it, because I told her, you know, we were dating, and it's like, we do not own red in this family.
That's just good life skills. Yeah. Let's be honest with it. All right, so how difficult, because you obviously enjoyed your time, you had success, and you enjoyed the experience. How difficult was that to leave?
It was really hard. Ultimately, what we came down to, the reason we left was, so the high school, I'll say if the goal was ever college coaching, the route to go to high school was not the correct route. You don't go to high school to go back to college. You just stay in college. And just talking with my wife over the last, you know, couple of years, we just decided, hey, like, do we ever want to get into college? Do we ever want to try college basketball? And the answer was yes. And so she said, the longer, you know, talking with some of my mentors that have done both, they said, the longer you stay in high school, the harder it is. Like, that, like, high school will always be an option, but the door for college is closing. Like, every year you're in high school, it's the harder it's going to be to get back into college. And so at the end of this last season, we just decided, like, I mean, season ended, and like, probably a few weeks after the season ended, I went to my AD at Grantsville and said, like we're done. Like, we don't have another job we're going to yet, but we're going to jump all into this college thing. And so we, for 2-3 months, we had no idea what the next step was, if we're going to move. Like, I was reaching out to everyone all over the country. And, you know,
true leap of faith then.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even to the point, like, we were willing to, because my wife works as well, and she makes, you know, good enough money that we could, you know, live on just her income for a year or two. So I was willing to, you know, just volunteer for a year or two and just kind of, you know, really just pay my dues that way. And so ultimately the slick job, the Salt Lake Community College job, opened up, and I was able to become an assistant coach there and jumped on board for the last, you know, couple months. But I truly love high school coaching. I love the age group. I love the time of life that they're in. I love everything about that. But it was more just the, hey, if we want to try this college gig out, we got to go now. It's the window's closing, and we knew, let's stay at Grantsville, and then, but, hey, let's see if there's jobs are open. Like, we knew we'd never get to college if we kind of left both doors open. So we're like, hey, we got to jump all into this college thing, and leave high school behind. And it's worked out.
How much has your faith grown? Not just going through that, but now sort of coming out on the other side of it and being back where you want to be.
Yeah, for me, I'm not a risk taker. It's just not in my DNA. And my wife maybe a little bit more than I am, but not. I mean, like that choice to, like, hey, we're stepping away from this job. Like we're essentially quitting, and then we're like the unknown
with nothing to go to.
Yeah,
yes,
that was really hard. Honestly, I think without my wife, I'm not sure I would be able to do it just by myself. I think the fact that we were able to, that we decided to do it together, and that we were both on board with it, and that we you know we'd find ways to make it work financially, and you know and all that stuff. I think with her, you know her strength and just who she is. It allowed me to okay, we're gonna find an opportunity. We're gonna get through this, and obviously looking back now, it's also a great decision. It was a great choice, and yeah, it's strengthened our ability to take risk and our strengthened our faith to step into the unknown.
Are you still 6'11"? You haven't grown any, have you?
I have not. My hair is longer now since the player. I shaved it down, so yep. I might hit officially 7 feet. Who knows?
Okay, hey, yeah. I never thought about that. That may be something to look into. So were you always the tall kid your entire life, or was there a point where you hit that growth spurt and then you became the tall kid?
Yeah, always a head taller than everyone. I was always the tall kid in the class.
Well, and you played high school basketball at one of the best in the state at Lone Peak. You guys were really good. You played with future Cougars Tyler Hawes and Josh Sharp, and you predated the, for a better term, the Lone Peak Three, the TJ Hawes and Nick Emery and Eric Mika. You played there before they were there. What was it like your high school days at being at such an elite high school program?
Yeah, it was. I mean, honestly, I feel like so Quincy Lewis, the head coach at Lone Peak. I mean, he ran it like a college program, and so like just learning. I mean, like I came in as a sophomore. I made the team as a sophomore at Lone Peak, and I just remember like he taught me how to be a player. He taught me how to work hard. He taught me how to play fast and slow the game down mentally and all. I mean, like there's no way I get to BYU without Coach Lewis. He was a demanding head coach and a hard head coach, but like. I mean, essentially, I mean, obviously, my parents, there's all people that helped me get there, but he was, in terms of just from a strictly basketball standpoint, all these great things I feel like that have come from BYU, he was a big part of that. And so it was a lot, and there was times when I was like, I'm not sure I can do this anymore, but he pushed us and pushed me and challenged me to grow. And that 3-year period at Lone Peak was difficult and challenging. But it essentially, it's almost like, fight or flight. And, I stuck it out and I grew from it. And I look back and I mean, there's so many things in life that I feel like I can go back to like that time period. It's like, I've done hard things before. And as a high school sophomore, junior, you don't have like, the mental understanding of how to cope with things or how to, but like, it's like, hey, I'm able to do hard things there. So I can do hard things now. But I don't want to paint the picture that I was like, it was like life and death. Like it wasn't like that. But like, I mean, Coach Lewis was demanding. It was hard. And he expected a lot, but because he expected a lot, like he got a lot out of us. And we grew together as a team. We also won a lot of games and championships. And I felt like that experience propelled me into being successful here because he taught me how to work hard, how to be committed, how to the smallest details matter and time matters and all these little things that I learned as a high school player. I was able to translate into a college player and a college GA and a college coach. And I love that I can tie back to him.
How was your recruitment out of high school? Was there any school that was even going to come close to taking you away from coming to BYU? Or was once BYU was there and you knew you had an opportunity to come here, that was it?
Yeah, in my mind, it was always BYU if I got the opportunity. I mean, I remember having a conversation with my mom that, like, even if BYU never offered, I might walk on here over there taking a scholarship somewhere else. I just loved it here. I mean, Utah State probably recruited me the hardest, like the earliest. They offered me first. But I mean, once BYU started recruiting me, it was kind of like, that's where my sight was set. And I was, kind of locked in there and the ones they offered, it was like the best day. I remember calling my dad, I remember calling my best friend who are both, also huge BYU fans. And it was like it happened. It's awesome. Like I'm like dreams have been realized.
Probably didn't even need to go out and get the gear. You already had it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's right. Hey, that's the beauty of being such a big fan. And when you end up playing for the university, you're never short on gear, whether you're part of the team or whether you're at home. I want to ask you about your mission. You served your mission in Texas, in McAllen, Texas, correct?
Yep.
How did that experience set you up for the next 10 years?
Yeah, so I felt like, perhaps prior to my mission, I felt like my parents did a really good job of raising me and teaching me the gospel, but also allowing me to learn the gospel myself and develop my own testimony. So I felt like I went on my mission with my own like real testimony of the gospel of the Book of Mormon. Like I read the Book of Mormon multiple times before my mission, and I felt like I truly believed it. And so I feel like I went into the mission field hey, this stuff really is true. I truly believe this stuff, not hoping or, you know, hey, this is what I'm supposed to do. Like, I wanted to serve a mission. I knew the gospel was true. I knew, you know, the blessing that it brought me and my family, and I was ready and eager to go and teach people about it. But I think what the mission taught me was, and cause you know, as a missionary, you see it firsthand every single day of, you know, how much just, yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, I grew up in the church, and so some little things I took for granted, you know, as a missionary, you see, you know, how much, you know, going to church or reading the scriptures in the morning or praying as a family or finding time for God each day, like how much that truly, you know, even if, you know, it's 5 or 10 or 15 minutes, how much that truly just makes a difference in people's lives. And so, those little details, plus, you know, learning to be obedient and learning to work hard and learning to I think, you know, one of the greatest strengths of missionary work, it's probably the hardest part sometimes is learning to get along with a companion and, you know, and having to be with them. We were with them 24/7, and sometimes that's not easy. But, you know, learning to communicate and overcome differences and communicate, you know, in times when there's disagreements. Like, there's so many things as a missionary that you learn that you come home and sometimes, you know, also there's a lot more outside influences, you know, when you come home from mission. But, like, I feel like, you know, if for 2 years you're engulfed in the church and the gospel and the things that truly matter. So when you come home, it's like, hey, I'm like, I always know what to fall back on because for 2 years, like, that's all I focused on. I learned that that's what matters most. And so, you know, going forward in my life, like, you know, whether it's basketball or dating or anything like that, hey, all these things are important. But at the end of the day, it all comes back to my own relationship with Jesus Christ. And how I can, you know, increase that and grow that. And so that's what I think my mission taught me is that at the end of the day, like, my job, I mean, my purpose as a missionary was to bring others to Jesus Christ, right? And so it's all about their individual relationship with Jesus Christ. It's all about my own relationship with Jesus Christ. And so that taught me that, hey, at the end of the day, you know, whether it's basketball or dating or jobs or whatnot, it all comes back to, where am I at with my own relationship with Jesus Christ.
One of the things that I have always admired about you, besides being just a heck of a nice guy, you truly are just a great human being. I was always impressed with you that you were so willing at a moment's notice to do any interview, regardless TV, radio, if somebody wanted to talk to you, you were out there and you were doing as many interviews as you could. I want you to talk a little bit about you. Throughout your life, you have navigated through life with a stutter.
Yeah.
And that always admired me that you didn't shy away from talking or being in front of the camera. You always did it. And from a mission standpoint, how did that part affect you on your mission? Was that something that was concerning to you?
Yes. So something I've dealt with. I mean, I'm not sure at what point I started. I felt like growing up, like as a kid, I don't feel like I had it. I mean, the first time I really noticed the stutter was like in high school. And then obviously I think it was magnified on the mission. It was probably, individually, that's probably the hardest part for me on the mission was, I mean, trying to learn Spanish, you know, and so like already struggling to communicate with people because I'm learning a language. And then the stutter on top of it. And so it's like, I mean, trying to speak stuttered Spanish was, you know, cause Spanish is already a very, you know, kind of fluent, you know, kind of fluid, you know, I mean, you know, it rolls off your tongue and people speak fast and like, if I'm stuttering, it's like, well, this makes zero sense. And so it was hard. I remember having a lot of emails with my parents about, you know, about this. And it was never one of those things that like, yes, I want it to be gone. You know, I mean, but it's a weakness. But it's one of those things that I just kind of accepted. But yeah, I remember having, you know, talks to my dad. He shared some scriptures or some, you know, talking about, you know, different. I actually forget now, but you know, in the Bible, there's a prophet or a servant that struggles to speech and talks about how God loosed his tongue. You know, and so there's different things like that. And so ultimately, I mean, I remember having, you know, my dad is talking about, hey, like, you know, this is God's work. You know, he'll loose your tongue when it's necessary. And so, you know, not that like the conversation I'm starting, it's not important, but ultimately, like, if God needs you to speak clearly, he'll let you speak clearly. And if you're stuttering, then, you know, it's just one of the, your, you know, weaknesses of mortality. And that's just how it goes. And so, yes, as a missionary, it was really hard. But going back to your point of, you know, not turning down interviews, like, And perhaps it's because it's who I am as a competitor. Like, I don't like to back down. And so I don't like to, like, hey, like, even though this is a weakness, even though this is something that maybe should, you know, turn me off from talking, it's like, I'm gonna embrace it. Like, I don't want to miss an experience or miss an opportunity because, you know, I'm self-conscious about about stuttering or how I talk or something like that, thing like that.
Well, and you told me that, you know, look, it's the things that make us unique that make us, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, ultimately, I think my story, I mean, it makes me real with other people, right? I mean, there's, you know, people, sometimes, I mean, I talk to people like, oh, you're tall, you went to BYU, you have everything you wanted. And you know, and it's like, yeah, I've lived an unbelievable life and I've been so blessed. But ultimately, yeah, I think I talk with people and they're like, oh, wow, like, you know, you don't speak, you know, perfectly or even great, you know, and that's hard. But it's like, yeah, like I think it makes me real. It makes me, yeah, it makes me unique, and it's part of who I am, and I've embraced it.
All right, we will take a quick break. We'll have more with Nate Austin when we come back. We'll get into his playing days, and he's the all-time leader in something, and we will get to that. We'll see how proud he is of that one. He's got a smirk on his face. I think he's pretty proud. We will see. We'll touch on that when we come back. This is Deep Blue on BYU Radio. Welcome back to the Deep Blue Podcast. Jason Shepherd with you. Happy to have Nate Austin with me here and talking some hoops and talking about growing up here and wanting to come to BYU. And the guy, honestly, Nate, you're living your dream, right? You said that at the beginning of the podcast. This is kind of living your best life, right?
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, I've been here for just over a month, and it's still kind of surreal that I get to work at BYU every single day.
So before we get into your playing career, you wanted to mention one more thing about your stuttering.
Yeah, it's one thing for me. Yeah, so it's something that I've navigated, and you know, I've been to, you know, to speech therapists, and they've kind of helped me a little bit. But the thing that I feel like has helped me the most, and honestly, it's something I feel like, again, I feel like I kind of learned from Coach Lewis at Lone Peak, because, you know, because he was so detailed in his practice plans and our approach to games and whatnot. And I feel like he really taught me that every detail matters and preparation is the key. That, you know, whether it was, you know, our, you know, a presentation at BYU for a comms class, or whether, you know, it was, you know, presenting a game plan to my kids at Grantsville High School, you know, I've learned that, you know, I feel more confident, and when I'm more confident, I feel like I stutter less. Maybe that's not true, but maybe in my head I do. But to me, preparation is everything. So I've tried, you know, really, you know, I try to understand, okay, what are the time? If I have a 15-minute presentation, I'm going to talk at this time. Like, I try to be really just uber detailed, not necessarily word for word, but preparation is everything to me. I feel like I'm not very good off the cuff. I can't just, you know, speak, and that's when I start to, you know, stutter and trip over my own words and things like that, and can't get a word out. But if I know, hey, if I'm comfortable with, you know, with the situation, and prepare ahead of time, then I think the confidence is part of me, and then I'm able to speak more freely, and I think the stuttering becomes less of an issue. And so I think just the detailed approach and preparation is one thing I've done that has helped me to kind of combat the stuttering issue.
Well, and don't you think, I mean, that lesson right there in terms of being prepared, it's just a good life lesson, whether it's being prepared to handle our relationships that we deal with, whether it's a spouse or friends, being prepared at work, being prepared in the gospel. It takes some of the fear away when you feel like you're prepared and in control, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they're like the whole gospel. I mean, like, you know, I mean, and the scripture says, you know, we learn it, you know, if we're prepared, we shouldn't fear, right? That's the gospel. You know, principle, and it's true. I mean, when we go into a situation prepared and we know what we're talking about, then the fear is kind of, you know, it kind of goes away, right?
All right. So, speaking of fear, what was it like coming into collegiate athletics? You finally get to BYU. Were you nervous coming here?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing about BYU is, I mean, yes, I'm happy to be here and excited to be here, but, you know, I know there's a extremely high bar here, high expectation. You know, both for, you know, athletic, you know, for the athletic department, but, you know, just, you know, specifically for the basketball program. And, you know, Coach Pope has a high bar. We have a high internal bar of what we feel we're capable of and what we feel we should achieve this year. And so, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's daunting. It's a daunting, you know, bar and expectation, but that's partly what draws me here is that, we want to compete. We want to compete to win. We want to compete to win championship. It's not, you know, it's not like, oh, let's just do our best. I mean, yes, we want to do our best, but people here, like, our best can be good enough with can match, you know, the best anywhere else in the country. And so let's get there.
What about when you got here as a player?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it was the same. I feel like you know, I think the athletic department has grown, but I feel like it's similar in that, you know, the goal was always to win, compete, and be our best, and win championships. I mean, Coach Rose, you know, I went to his Hall of Fame banquet earlier this week, and you know, the one thing I remember about Coach Rose was he was truly a winner. I mean, he obviously won, you know, 20 games almost every single year he was here, and the one thing I always remember about Coach Rose is that at the end of the day, it was all about winning, you know. Yeah. and it was all about, you know, what are you doing to help us win? And so, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think it's always been the goal.
And you joined the basketball team the year after Jimmer left, correct?
I did, yeah.
So take us back to that time. The program had just gone to the Sweet 16. Jimmer's now in the NBA. What was the basketball program like at that time for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was a little naive. Excuse me, I was a little naive to ignorant to the situation, because I was on my mission for the Jimmer years. Like, I got updates from my dad, but like, I truly didn't understand like Jimmer mania. Like, I mean, I've gone back and watched videos, you know, now just to understand it, but it's like, you don't get it.
You can't recreate that. Yeah.
Because, like, you know, how much he was on ESPN, just all the different things. And so when I came in here, like, to me, like, there was a great energy around it, and people had, you know, high expectations and high hopes and all the different things. And but like, to me, like, it was just normal. Like, oh, this must be how everyone feels about the program all the time. And so I didn't know if there was anything, if it was different or anything like that. I mean, yeah, I mean, there was a great buzz about the program, and yeah, I knew that they had a great year the previous year, but I was so focused on my mission. I was so oblivious to what, you know, all went down, that I came in here and I thought, hey, this is the norm here. Everybody loves BYU basketball, and they're, you know, just constantly talking about it and how excited they are, and they're camping out, and it's just what we do here.
So how would you describe your BYU career?
I'm very proud of my career. I came in here and able to, you know, get minutes as a freshman, and I'm proud because I feel like every team, and maybe this is the coach coming out of me now, but every team, you know, is going to have, you know, 1, 2, 3, you know, guys who are, you know, your guys, your scorers, your perhaps your stars, right? And then you have other guys who have to buy into a role, and I feel like I was a really good role player. I was never a star. I was never, you know, the best player. You know, I mean, I think I averaged probably just as many fouls as I did, you know, points in my career, which is fine. But like, I feel like I did a good job of buying into my role, and hey, essentially, what are the coaches asking me to do, and what does the team need me to do? And you know, every year, I mean, we're top, you know, 10, 15, 20 in the country in scoring. You know, I mean, yes, I would have liked to shoot more, but the team didn't need me to shoot more. Right? You know, we had guys like Tyler Hawes and Kyle Collinsworth and Chase Fisher and Nick Emery and, you know, all these guys who are just big time scorers and shooters. That's like, hey, if the team needs me to get rebounds and, you know, and defend and set screens, and, you know, then I'm all for it. Ultimately, I love being part of the team, and I love playing a role. And, you know, and essentially, I mean, yeah, like I talked about before, like, my dream was to play at BYU, and so like, I was just so thrilled just to be part of the team and have a role. And so the fact that I was able to get minutes and play, like, I didn't care if I was, you know, the best player. I mean, obviously, I mean, yeah, I was trying to be my best every single day and improve and be the best I could be. But at the end of the day, I just wanted to be, you know, a part of the team and play a role. And so, you know, whatever the coaches need me to do and ask me to do, like, I was happy with. Like, I've had, you know, multiple, you know, people in my family and friends like, oh man, I wish you could have shot more. And it's like, sure, but like, I don't care about that. Like, I truly just loved embracing a role and helping the team be the best version of themselves.
Okay, so you brought up the fouls thing. Yep. Now's probably as good a time as any to bring this up. You are BYU's all-time leader in fouls.
I am.
So how do you wear that badge? Is that, like, well, how do you view that?
I mean, well, I'm also the all-time leader in games played.
That's true. We were going to get, yeah.
So I tell, you know, there's always a little asterisk. Like, I'm foul leader, but, you know, I didn't foul out the most. So I use my fouls, you know.
Strategically.
Yeah, very, you know, yes. You know, is it a cerebral, you know, strategic thing, right? And so
you got him. Why not use it?
Yeah, 2 or 3 games. Let's save an easy bucket and make the guy go earn it from the foul line. No, I mean it is what it is. I don't, initially when I got the record, I remember like my last year when people were tallying, like, until I got the record, and I was like super annoyed by it at that point. And like, the first couple years after I got done, like, I hated the record, but now it's like, oh, it's whatever. It's like, you know, my name's in the record book. That's great. You know, it's not the most positive thing, but it's not over negative either.
No.
It's
that doesn't mean you were going up and punching people in the face.
Yeah. So I'm not sure I would say I'm proud of it, but I'm also like, it's cool being the record book.
You had a season-ending injury against Utah. How difficult of an injury was that to go through for you?
Well, the fact that it was stretching was a little bit difficult to grasp. You know, I was like, how do I get a hamstring tear from stretching? That was a little embarrassing, and you know, and there's pictures of me on that are just awful of me, like grabbing at my hamstring and moaning. But it was just hard to. I mean, because I've always kind of prided myself on being available and being able to play, and I feel like my whole career I played through injuries. You know. Ankles, and I mean my whole freshman year I played through a torn labrum, and but to me, like, that brought me pride of like, hey, like, I'm gonna give my team 100% even though I'm not feeling 100%, and so to be able to have something that like knocked me out of the lineup and not able to play, that was hard to grab. I remember, I mean, that was actually my senior year. I was able to get a medical redshirt and come back.
Yeah.
And so I was able to, but I thought I was done. And so that was hard for me to grasp. Like, I mean, I remember actually as soon as it happened, and like, I remember like crying, and like, it was like, this is how my, like, I invested so much into this place and in my career here. Like, this is how it's going to end with a season ending injury. Like, I was devastated for a while, but, yeah, it was hard.
Okay. So you mentioned, you had to walk onto the team your senior year due to the fact you had received the medical hardship waiver.
Yeah.
How hard was that for you?
I mean, it wasn't that bad. I mean, ultimately, because it got to the point where, so, like, you know, the staff was expecting me because I didn't redshirt at all. And so they had planned out for 4 years. And so all the scholarships were taken up to that point. And so they said, hey, we'd love to have you back, but we don't have a spot for you. And so I talked to my dad, and I mean, my dad makes, you know, he's made good enough money that he said, hey, you know, we can support you financially if this is something that's important to you. And so, honestly, from my standpoint, it wasn't hard because, like, I mean, this is probably coming from a limited, you know, college kid's mind. Like, the money kept coming in, right? And so it didn't feel any different to me. And so it's, you know, it's probably an entitled mentality and all that stuff. And they're like, I got a lot of issues that, you know, but it wasn't hard.
I have a moment. I'm sure other fans have a moment of your career. Do you have a favorite moment that you look back on fondly?
I mean, the moment always gets brought up is the block at Gonzaga.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one. I mean, that's probably one of my favorite moments. It's one of the ones that, like this play directly translated to help us win the game. And so, yeah, that's certainly a fun moment. There's other moments that, you know, that I like, but, you know, that's certainly a moment that I cling to just because, yeah, it's like this, you know, end of game, you know, game-winning block. It was, yeah, something that, you know, directly translated to us winning the game.
And that highlight is played over and over and over again. And does it get old to watch it? I can tell you, it doesn't get old me watching it.
It doesn't, actually.
Yep,
it
that's
doesn't.
What I was hoping it, you it were going to say.
And now I got a son who's almost two, and obviously I'm always around the game and basketball, and so he's always has a basketball in his hand, my wife has shown him the video on YouTube a few times, and so he sometimes just points to the screen and says, you know, ball or dad. He wants to see some of the plays, and so it kind of warms my heart that he wants to see it too.
I do want to ask one more thing. Your senior year, the team named you the most inspirational player. What did earning that honor mean to you?
I mean, it was nice to be recognized. You know, just to be recognized for efforts, and you know, I tried to be a leader. I tried to, you know, obviously learn more about leadership, you know, after my playing days. But yeah, I think I tried to build relationships with each of the guys. I tried to be a leader. I tried to be ready to go and be available. And yeah, I'm not sure I was an inspiration, but I guess that's for them to decide. But it just meant that, you know, perhaps, you know, my small efforts meant something to at least a few of them.
What's important to you now in your life, now that you're back here at BYU and you've got the family and, you know, the career's on a good path? What's that like for you right now?
I mean, honestly, I think what's important to me now is being a dad. Like, I love being a dad. I love spending time with my kids and, you know, my wife and their family. And you know, I've always been a big proponent of family time. I've always loved family time. But, you know, I think being a dad, it just changes your perspective of life and what truly matters. And I think, you know, with this job, you know, coaching's a busy and in a time demanding profession. And so I think one thing that matters more now is trying to be present. You know, like, you know, working, you know, when work's demanding, you know, get your work done. And when you're at home, try to be as, you know, present as possible and really dive into the, you know, relationships with my kids and my wife, and obviously that's something that's probably an ongoing, you know, learning process and has a steep learning curve with it. But yeah, I think that's something that's more important to me now, is just the essentially being where my feet are. When I'm at home, you know, I need to, you know, I mean, also there's time when calls come or things like that, but as much as possible, really focusing in on them as people, and you know, and I mean, cause some, you know, in this profession, time can be limited, and so it's not about, you know, time as much as it is like let's maximize the time we do have, and being present with them, and really, you know, understanding them each as individuals, and their needs and their wants, and you know, and what they're saying, and so I think that's something that's different. I'm not sure that's probably not the direction of the question, but that is, I think, the focus now is, you know, obviously I love BYU, I love, you know, this job, but now it's, you know, because as a player, I think what's different is, you know, you're just so focused on yeah. yourself, and, yeah. and you're only focused on yourself, and yes, you have family, but like basketball always comes first, and yeah, you gotta understand your academics, you go dating and things like that, but at the end of the day, it's like, it's all about, like, I mean, as a player, like, it's all about Nate Austin, and you know, and that's, and nowadays, like, you know, being a coach, like, it's now it's all about the players, right? And it's all about, you know, and as the ops guy, it's all about the players, and now it's all about the, you know, the rest of the staff, you know, and being a dad and a husband, now there's other people to worry about, and so I think my perspective now, it's more outward rather than the player, which is a lot more inward.
All right, one last question before we wrap things up. You've timed coming back to BYU pretty good. Number one, you came back, and I think within the first week, you guys were able to go on the European trip. So you went to Italy and Croatia. And by the way, everybody that I've talked to, I've never been out of the United States. So to say I've never been to Croatia it goes without saying. Everybody I've talked to said Croatia was unbelievable. So you got to go on that, and now you're coming back when BYU's entering its first season in the Big 12, which is just so much fun. How excited are you about where the program is and what's in store for it moving forward?
Yeah, I think the program's in a great place. You know, I think Coach Pope has done, and his staff has done, a masterful job of getting the program where it's at. You know, kind of, you know, building off what Coach Rowe's built here, and, you know, just the consistency, and Coach, you know, Pope has done a great job of building on top of that, and now we have a new challenge of going to the Big 12 and, you know, competing against the best, you know, night in and night out, and I think it's every, you know, hopefully it's every competitor's dream to compete against the best, and I think that will bring the best out of us as a staff. I think it'll bring the best out of us as a university. I think it'll bring the best out of us, as, you know, from the player standpoint, and I think it's just a great opportunity to showcase to the world, because it's a bigger stage now of this is who BYU is. You know, I mean, yes, you know, we have an honor code, which, you know, people, you know, target and think is funky, but I think if we embrace who we are, you know, from the honor code perspective, but, you know, from the religious and church perspective, from, you know, the sports perspective, and you know, all the different things that make up BYU, I think if we embrace it and then showcase who we are, I think it's a great platform to show, like, this is who we are, and we're gonna stand by it. You know, everyone, you know, most other athletic programs or teams or schools do things differently, and that's okay. But we're, you know, we have a big stage now, a big opportunity ahead of us to showcase that, hey, things can be done, you know, in this way. I mean, in staffing today, Coach Pope talked about just the dual kind of mission of the university. You know, we have this church aspect, and we have this, you know, our goal is to win. Our goal is to win in the program, but it's also, we have a mission, you know, for the church and to create better individuals. And there's, you know, we have these dual purposes that are aligned.
Yep.
But every other athletic team in the country, they have one purpose, and that's to win. Right. And so we have these two things, and Coach Pope talked about today how great it is that, you know, he said if we can embrace both these purposes, that, you know, we'll be able to win at a higher level than ever before. We'll be able to, but he said if we have to embrace both, then we truly have to, you know, understand the details of winning, but understand the details and the mission of the university. And if we embrace both of them, then this stage, this opportunity, creates the opportunity that BYU has never had before. I think it's exciting. It's daunting, but like as a competitor, like I love opportunities that seem hard. I love opportunities that seem, you know, impossible. I love opportunities that seem, you know, it's going to take time. All these things are, as a competitor, like bring it on. Like, you know, I want this opportunity. I want this experience. And I think it's a time that I'm eager and excited to be a part of.
It's where the greatest growth comes from too, when you challenge yourself, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Well, and that's certainly on the horizon. Nate, it's so awesome that you're back and involved with BYU basketball. We will all be seeing a lot more of you as we get closer to the basketball season. thank you for coming in and doing this. When I told you that you were truly one of the nicest human beings, I meant every word of that. You were awesome today. Thank you so much for doing this, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm really excited for this season. Come out and support, and go Cougs.
Absolutely. Thanks once again to my guest, Nate Austin. My name is Jason Shepherd. Josh Bergstrom and Ben Hall produced this episode. Deep Blue's senior producer is Cleon Wall. You can download and subscribe to Deep Blue on all podcast platforms or find all episodes on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.